Mexico, Venezuela, and Japan all supply ballplayers to the major leagues, but no country outside the U.S. accounts for nearly as many of them as the Dominican Republic. On opening day this year, 83 Dominicans had jobs in the bigs. Many, many more appear on minor league rosters. In Dominican Baseball, subtitled New Pride, Old Prejudice, Alan Klein, who joins me in the studio, examines the relationship between Major League Baseball and the game in the DR. Professor Klein, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thank you, Bill.
Let's start with some background about how young ballplayers in the Dominican Republic work their way toward trying to become the next Pedro Martinez or David Ortiz. Unlike players coming out of colleges or high schools in the U.S., they don't get drafted. They're represented by men called buscones, literally finders. How does that process work?
Well, it's a process that's changed a lot over the last 20 years or so. But essentially, at this point, these young kids, 12, 13, 14, are pretty much found almost in any empty lot you go to in any part of the country. And the person who is observing them and making decisions about their future are these people. They've been called buscones. I refer to them also as player developers because they do a whole lot more than just simply find the players. And so if they sign this kid, they sign him for with the understanding that they will develop him. Mm-hmm. Now, developing a kid may be as simple as just working him out daily, or in the more sophisticated cases, buscones have complete academies where they bring them in, they feed them, they house them, they oftentimes pay for family members who are ill to receive medical treatment. They basically take care of the entire family until that magic date when the kid turns 16 and a half. In the Dominican Republic, that's called July 2nd, and that's an official point at which a young player can be signed by a major league team. Buscone receives, by our standards, rather substantial commission, about 30-35% is common these days.
Of the bonus.
Of the bonus, yeah. Right.
You suggest that the conflict and tension between Major League Baseball and the Buscones, I'm quoting now, mirrors global relations between those with power and those without power. The most contentious example of that is the age at which Major League Baseball signs players, I suppose. How did that rule come about?
Initially, there wasn't an age that was considered optimal. Back in the mid-80s, a really important figure named Ralph Avila, who ran the Dodger Academy at Campo Las Palmas, began to notice that his players just required a certain amount of time to mature. So they decided that signing 18-year-olds and then adding two or three more years was not really cost-effective. It was better to get a 16-year-old. And so they began to pay more for a 16-year-old, and they began to pay less for an 18-year-old. Getting back to that question about global relations, MLB was in a position to dictate the nature of the relationship, and it was the case that Dominicans accepted those decisions unquestioningly, and all of a sudden that changes in the turn of the century when buscones begin to develop a certain amount of power. And that's when the relationship becomes contested.
The basis of this seems to me so weird. I mean, I understand the logic that players need a certain amount of time to be not only physically mature but ready to come to the U.S. and play baseball. But the idea that an 18-year-old would be worth a great deal less than a 16-and-a-half-year-old, it simply denies the fact that not all 18-year-olds are alike any more than all 16-and-a-half-year-olds are alike.
Yeah, and this doesn't even take into consideration the preparation that oftentimes these buscones, they get them to go to school, they get them to learn English. So a lot of the remediation that MLB built that decision on is no longer valid in the case of some of these buscones. In contrast, and to show you there's a kind of a nationalist piece of this, if a Cuban leaves Cuba and escapes, and he's 30 years old, those same restrictions don't apply to him. He can get millions of dollars in bonus money. There was a couple of players that were being developed during the time I was there who, from the time they initially received an offer from the major league team till the time they were vetted. That's when the State Department and MLB runs their own separate investigations.
Just to make sure they are who they say they
right.
are
and
they
every, are the age in they post say 9/11, they are. That's exactly what we have. We have a real emphasis on that. But oftentimes by Buscones, this is seen as an intentional strategy because the player who received a $5 million offer, and I'm referring to one case in particular, by the time the vetting stopped, he was a full year and a half older. On this model, his value decreases. Mm-hmm. And for him, he was not okay with MLB at $5 million. But a year and a half later, he was okay at $2-point-something million. So it's really, from their perspective, this is a way of driving down costs. And they view it with shock. You know, they're very disheartened by it.
You started writing about baseball in the Dominican Republic 25 years or so ago, and you acknowledge that the extent to which the Dominicans have recently developed what you call the most modern baseball facilities in the hemisphere has surprised you. Why?
I don't want to take all the credit away from Major League Baseball, nor do I want to give them undue credit. I mean, the truth is, it's part of what the cost of doing business in the Dominican Republic has become. If they're going to attract a top-level candidate, it's only going to be because that's what... It's like your kid going to on a college visit. If they don't see the right kind of dorm with all the little, you know, pluses and so forth and so on, they won't be intrigued.
Given those baseball facilities and the way in which numbers of Dominicans have assumed leadership positions, not only in the Dominican Republic, but in the front offices of Major League Baseball as well, why is it that, as you say, MLB is still attempting to coerce Dominicans into compliance?
Well, you know, personally, I think there's a healthy degree of tokenism at the highest levels. I don't truly feel that Dominicans are appreciated for what they can bring to an organization. I mean, we love, you know, it's the old notion, we love to see him on the field. We love to see him in front of a movie camera, but behind the camera, behind the scenes, that's where the corridors of power are, and we're not going to give that power readily. There's a tendency to still view the Dominican Republic as a colonial outpost, and as long as we have that colonial kind of mindset, We're not going to make, you know, I mean, Omar Minaya was a great opportunity. It didn't work out in terms of winning championships, but what that team did in the short few years that he was the general manager of the Mets was really kind of remarkable on the organizational level. And I think the Tampa Bay Rays do a great job, too. But there are limits to all that. So as an industry, there are owners there that don't even know where their academy is in the Dominican Republic. That's how far removed.
Alan Klein is the author of Dominican Baseball, New Pride, Old Prejudice. Alan, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks again, Bill.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is James Trout. We had help this week from Martin Kessler and from John Kalish. Our intern is Zoe Sobel, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. It's time for our final word, and oh, wait, it looks like Charlie Pierce has fought his way back into the studio.
And remember, on May 12th at the Somerville Theater, you can see Bill and I talk about sports!
Thank you very much, Charlie. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to build a culture of health for all Americans, on the web at rwjf.org. The Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems, at pewtrusts.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.